M48. Number 3A.
I have a little note on my desk that reads, could you please give a short explanation of what you said about identification in cybernetics yesterday? I did not understand what you were saying correctly. I can't blame this person of writing this. I think I must apologize for having tried within a few moments at the end of last meeting to explain information entropy and identity principle in such a short time that I can quite understand that it was a bit too difficult. So somehow I have to tidy it up today or sometime. And I will come back to these three big concepts of mind, spirit and soul as we go on. I will try to pick up the subject from yesterday, because what we really wanted to do yesterday was to see what is the attitude of practice on each level of science. So we started with the level of science itself, where we begin to see that there really we have principle being aware of its own nature, of itself. The divine principle is its own infinite mind. That the divine principle is its own infinite spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love. And that naturally gives a consciousness of being itself. It's so to say the atmosphere of being, knowing itself as being. And naturally this is a very all-inclusive sense, because if we go out from there, and we always can go out from there if we want, we mustn't think, I'm not yet there. I think that sense must be cast out of our mentality, which has lingered on us or on Christian Science since ever, that they said, oh, I'm not yet there. Where there? Where can we be if not here? There is no there. If being is one, we are here, and everything is here. And this is just the thing which we want to do this week, to see that the wholeness of being is not somewhere outside of us, somewhere to look at, to think about, but that there is only one being, and therefore we are the very identity of that one being. So at that point we realize really that this one infinite principle is its own selfhood. Then we considered the level of divine science, which is already an analysis of the infinite one into the four of Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, because it is the analysis of what is going on within that one being knowing itself. And so divine science says, what is going on within that science itself? You see, divine science is showing what is going on within science itself. Can you see that we cannot separate in watertight compartment those levels? So there in divine science we began to find that system of Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, which says that mind, because from the point of view of science it says mind is its own infinite mind, begins now to see its own infinite mind as a dynamics, as an operational sense of itself, mind manifesting itself out of itself, through itself, the Christ, as itself, Christianity, for itself, science. and gets so a rhythmic circuit which is on a very high level. We also said that these laws really are something which I don't think anybody can teach to somebody else, but that it is something which each one for himself in its quiet hours of pondering and loving it just has to think it out what it means. Not only to think it out what it means, but then to feel it out, if you can say so, what it means. Then to love it out what it means, until one just feels one is being it, what one has felt, and that is then the rhythmic round of divine science. Every operational system has also its definite, infinite functions, and has a functional office. That functional office seems to be absolute Christian science. We have seen how this functional office is symbolized in Mrs. Eddy's writings as those four cardinal points. It's the open system of the four cardinal points, where every little degree within the whole circle all around, I can't put my arms out there, see? But it is that you start out with the four cardinal points, but because it's an open system, this is all open here, you see? It's no more a closed four-sided city, a closed city which is closed, and closed not in the sense of finity, but as a coherent, all-comprehensive system. So, in this absolute Christian science, one begins to see that divine science is as these four constantly functional as absolute Christian science. So that sphere can look at from each little point of that sphere. So we can be in Braunwald and look at the globe from the point of view of Braunwald. And it looks very different than if you look on the globe from the point of view of London or from Los Angeles. It gives every time a complete different aspect. So it shows how absolute Christian science is now showing this infinite calculation of the very fundamentals of Word, Christ, Christianity and science operating as the main aspects of life, truth and love. Therefore, every time, really, see, every time we think about life, truth and love, we'll think in a different way. Every time, if we are not dull as a dodo, but if we use our inspiration, certainly every time we think about the very same fundamentals of life, truth and love as the principle of being, we think about it in a completely new and fresh way. But we said, in divine science, there is only life, truth, love as the principle of it. But we can see that that closes within itself, contains within itself that it is always new. Therefore, absolute Christian science. Can you see how divine science ushers in absolute Christian science? The divine science is really the moving, motivating force of absolute Christian science. And again we see it cannot be divided up and say, oh, I'm just thinking on the level of divine science, that's now my level. We can't. Because in the measure as we think on the level of divine science, we can't help that we think every time differently about it, which means that we compute. That's the fact, functional sense of it. And so we have seen there in absolute Christian science that there already we have a different sense also of practitioner, treatment, patient, and its effect as being healed. That we could see that the practitioner is God Himself, namely life, truth and love. That is our constant practitioner who never goes to sleep, is always awake, is always on the job, is always life, always the spontaneity of life, the newness of life, the immediateness of life, which is always the now of life, and therefore always, because it's spontaneous, always new, therefore brings out always a new functional and factual sense of that life, a new form of truth. And that form of truth we know is, because it stems from life, is always complete. Life, truth and love as one. So that's going on. That practitioner who knows out of itself that everything that is being projected into being is of the nature of life with a perfect form, because that form is fulfilled. Then we have seen that thought within us expands. I am on the horizontal now, I go to the Christ in Absolute Christian Science, expands and says, oh yes, that's fine. It constantly is that practitioner is constantly at work, but what it does is that again is always so new that it individualizes that ideal. Ideal truth individualizes it, life, as perfect expressions of that individualized sense, love. So we have in the Christ truth, life, love, which gives us that peace which says, yes, that practitioner, which is not a person, but life, truth and love itself, is translating itself constantly from the point of view of the complete ideal of life, truth and love to the specific, adapted form of ideas of life, truth and love. So that I feel whatever is going on in every little detail of the whole universe is really touched by that infinite ideal of life, truth and love, because that ideal, that truth, is individualizing itself in every little thing, and in such a universal thing, love, such a universal sense, love, that it touches every single right calculation in being. So that I don't have to do anything again. It's letting it happen, letting it translate itself from the point of view of the synonymous term life, truth and love to the point of the idea reflecting ideally life, truth and love. It's just another form of consciousness which is necessary. Instead of thinking, now I have to translate that ideal to that very situation, I say, no, I don't have to translate that ideal to this and this situation. I let it happen. That's the only thing I can do, that I don't do anything. And that's quite a job, not to do anything, but to let it happen. To get me out of the way so much that I don't force anything, that I don't interfere with anything, that I don't have any human conception about it, that I don't have any material conception about it, no time conception about it, no conception how it should happen, when it should happen, in which way it should happen, where it should happen, and so on, and so on. It is letting it happen. The word, the practitioner just says, let there be life, truth and love. The Christ says, let that infinite ideal of life, truth and love happen. Let it translate itself. And if it translates itself, it always translates itself only to its own nature, namely as ideas, never to anything else, everything foreign to itself. So that I begin to realize the sense of Christianity, life and love. Namely, that each right problem, each right situation, each infinitely right problem and situation is already being brought forth by life, has already been brought forth by life, by the Father, and is already cared for and protected by love, so that it cannot lose its identity, that it cannot lose its standard. We can call it patient, we can call it the compound idea man, we can call it a situation, we can call it a condition, whatever that patient may be. It is always seeing that nothing has to be created, produced, brought forth, but that since time immemorial there is that sense of the Father which projects itself, and that sense of Mother which says, and that which has been created by life, I care, I protect it, I love it, I embrace it, I preserve it, I'm the safety of it, so that it cannot lose its standard. And so I feel that the only patient there is the healthy situation, is the healthy idea brought forth by life, impelled by life, cared for by love. And then thought always pushes further to science, so that last column on the level of absolute Christian science, to truth and love. Because science, the last one, always says, more or less, all what the Word and Christ and Christianity has been giving me and enlightening me were only a mode or a working hypothesis, nearly, to arrive at science itself, which really matters alone, which says, well, there has never been a practitioner, a treatment, and a patient, because facts are what they are and have always been, truth. And these facts are facts in their whole completeness, love. You really never needed a practitioner, nor a treatment, nor a patient. All there is are that being is compound of facts, truths, which are absolutely complete and whole. And so nothing had to be brought forth by the practitioner, nothing had to be translated from the ideal to the idea, nothing had to be set right and be cared for in Christianity. Always in science we know facts are facts, and they are indestructible, and they are complete. And then we usually always touch science. Then we come to the plane or level of Christian science. On the level of Christian science, the aspect is different, because we know that level of Christian science teaches us how what we have seen in absolute Christian science, which had been born from divine science, which had been explaining science itself, how this absolute Christian science is taking care of the human, the material, of the opposite. Here in Christian science, the central question is how truth takes care of the belief in opposites. Up to this point we never had that, you see? That was not the office of the other levels of science. Up to this point we were really scientists in that purest sense, which says, I'm a mathematician, I'm not here to correct false calculations. I'm here to calculate rightly. But we know that the mathematician must also be able to detect wrong calculations, or he is not a good mathematician. So a good divine and absolute Christian scientist must also be a Christian scientist who is able to detect error and to see why it is error and why it is nothing. So on the level of Christian science, we always get the problem, how does the true sense of absolute Christian science deal with the concept that there could be something opposite, something contradictory, something which is the very counterfeit of it. It's always the relation of truth to error, and how to solve that. It is therefore always that great question of how the spiritual can dissolve the material, how the spiritual deals with the material. And until we are at peace within ourselves that there are not two universes, not the diverse of a spiritual universe and a material universe, until within ourselves that is completely and naturally and understandingly resolved, until then we need the level of Christian Science. Because the level of Christian Science deals now with concrete error, with audible sin and... what was the other? Audible sin and... invisible error, yes. I'm never good at quoting. As a matter of fact, I don't think I know more than one or two sentences out of the textbook by heart. And yet I have given such a lot of time to the textbook, as you know. Very great deal. Do you know why? I will tell you in an hour. Because I'm not interested in atomistic Christian Science. I'm interested in comprehensive Christian Science, in a cybernetic sense of Christian Science, seeing the textbook as a whole. And it's very helpful, as you see, sometimes to be able to quote correctly, but it has also its disadvantage that one is too much distracted on atomistic, isolated sense of the whole. We'll talk about it in an hour or so. So, that was a side mark. And thank you for helping me. It's it's dealing with with audible sin and... Oh, I forgot it already. Yes. So, the burden of disproving really the sense that there is a universe opposed to that spiritual universe, to that spiritual being, is a matter of seeing through the material universe. And the material universe is really built up of three accentuated factors, namely mortal mind, matter, and sense testimony. Sense testimony. Everything in the material universe starts with mortal mind, with material thinking. I always quote what you already know from Lincoln Barnett in his book on Einstein and the universe, where he said that the whole universe, from the little molecule up to the stars, is only a construction of the human mind. It's the whole material universe is what the human mind believes it to be, of how it looks at it. It is looking through a glass darkly. It's looking at the universe instead of from where we have been coming, from the level of science, divine science, and absolute Christian Science, instead of looking it from that point of view, which would be looking, mind, seeing from that point of view, divine mind, is looking at it from a standpoint outside of this principle. And that is looking through a glass darkly. There, mortal mind always has as its object the subjective state of mortal mind called matter. Mortal mind therefore constructs for itself a concept of a material universe, limited, put over it a network of time and space. It limits its view in many, many ways. And all these limitations taken together is called the material universe. The physicists don't know what matter is because matter doesn't exist, so they can't know what matter is. They only know that it is a construct of various human elements, of the belief of weight, mass, gravitation, energy, tangibility, ponderosity, can you say weight, tangibility. It's made up out of these factors. And if we take away these factors, matter has gone. So we see matter itself isn't anything. It is a construction of the human consciousness. And that human consciousness is limited. And we see, therefore, because matter is the subjective state of the human mind or mortal mind, therefore it believes in an identity. I come now to the third of soul, believes in an identity of this mortal mind relationship with matter, and therefore believes that mind is in matter, which is sensation, which is sense testimony, and we get the false identity of the universe, which is called the material universe. Therefore, the correcting synonymous terms for the material universe is mind, spirit, soul. It's mind which says, I am the infinite enlightenment, I am the infinite information, I am the infinite translation and communication of information. And the more mind informs us of what is true and right, the more we have a spiritual universe, namely an ordered universe. A spiritual universe is nothing else than a universe which is ordered, because then it can be understood, and then it is understood of mind. That's why spirit is the life-giving faculty of mind, and we get that wonderful combination why mind, as information, brings order and not chaos. It brings more order. Order is understanding, and the moment we lay order on top, order as a network on top of what seems to have been chaos, that chaos resolves itself into order. There doesn't exist any chaos. We have no chaotic state in this world. We think all is in chaos. It is not true. Chaos is not a state of things. Chaos is not understanding the order in that state of things. That's all. There is no chaos. And that's what is being found out by cybernetics, that the more we have information, and the more information there is in a cybernetic system, the more information there is in a bee, the more order that bee has and finds its place where it can get honey, the more order there is in mind, divine mind, the more we have an ordered universe, because we understand it, everything is clear, it's completely transparent. We have taken away the glass darkly, and I have wiped it until it was clean, that the divine mind has the clear light of information and of vision, and then we see that everything is ordered. That's spirit. Spirit orders all things. Order is heaven's first law. That's what they call extropy. But I won't touch any more on that word, so slightly.